to the Process Podcast, an interview series exploring the process of survival as a creative. Typically, we talk to folks from all sorts of backgrounds and industries about money, mental health, relationships, the creative process itself, and more. For this season, we're trying something a little bit new and experimenting with theme seasons. And for this one, we're focusing on music, bands, artists, and industry folks. Big thanks to Desert Days Music Fest for helping make a lot of these interviews happen. Visit desertdays.org to check them out and to grab your tickets for the fest in the fall of this year. Also, thank you to Ton Starts Bandit for providing their song Wet Ass Morning as our intro and outro music, and to Hannah Spencer for doing all of our branding and design work. Hope you dig it. Hi. Hello. How's it going? I recently had to listen to some of our old episodes for a small collaboration we're doing with Big Cartel, and man, what a humbling experience it is to, I listen to my voice all the time when I'm like, or to the stupid shit that comes out of my mouth all the time when I'm editing, but it's a different experience editing these conversations. I have a goal, like a focused goal versus just listening to them, and yeah, whew. Anyway, this episode is a special one for me personally. I debated whether or not to share this, but if you're listening to this episode on the day that it's released, that is February 19th, it's my birthday, which I realize 95% of you don't give a shit that it's my birthday, and the other 5% are probably my close friends and already know. But the reason why I share that is because I did put some thought into what episode I wanted to share on this day for myself, selfishly, and I went with this one, which, by the way, our guest today is Eric D. Johnson, aka Fruit Bats. He's been creating music as Fruit Bats since 1997, and I chose this conversation for a couple of reasons. Jess Williamson from a couple weeks ago would have also been a great one to put out on someone, anyone's birthday. But I chose this one because, for one, Fruit Bats music has like always made me feel the feels, and it probably always will. I listened to the song Birthday Drunk from Absolute Loser, which came out a few years ago, I think 2016. Often, I listen to it often, and I'm sure I'm misinterpreting his lyrics as he intended, or I'm not interpreting his lyrics as he intended, but whatever, I interpret them through my own filter. And anyway, that song always makes me think about birthdays in general, even though it's not really about that. But also because I've been listening to his music for like 15 years, and or maybe longer. And it was cool to just like sit down and have a super casual conversation. And I usually wouldn't tell someone that I've been a fan of their music for like half my life, but I did tell him, and he was like really gracious about it, which was nice. And I think says kind of, I don't, you'll pick up on his graciousness and humility in this conversation for sure. Also, this is going to be kind of a long intro, so sorry. Anyway, this conversation is with Eric D. Johnson of Fruit Bats. We talk about his new record, Gold Past Life, which I got the opportunity to listen to. And like I said, man, his music always makes me feel the feels. It's really, really good. So excited for it to come out this spring on Merge Records, which we also talk about his experience signing to Merge, and also just the experience of looking for a record label and how it's pretty miserable for musicians, and how he's been quote unquote lucky with, although, you know, I think talent and hard work played a role in that, but with signing to Merge and also having released several albums on Sub Pop in the past. So the album comes out in the spring, and it's absolutely beautiful. We mostly cover in our conversation the slow burn career that he feels that he's had, and how with every release, like a little something has sustained him. Not just sustained, but like moved his career forward in an inch. And, you know, I said this to him, and I'll say it again, I think that's what a sustainable career looks like, and it almost feels like a healthier approach, whether or not intended. Speaking of sustaining, we also talk about having multiple income streams and just like doing what you can in the music industry to make money. We talk about the whole commercial thing, scoring music for films, and that learning process, his songwriting process, and ways in which Fruit Bats is a quote unquote weird little pony. How he cut his teeth on the music industry through his experiences touring with other bands like Caliphone, one of the greatest bands in the world, and the Shins for 4 years and a lot more. Again, this has been a long intro. Sorry. If you're new here and if you enjoy this, please subscribe and all that stuff or review it, like it, etc. For links to everything we talk about, check out theprocess.co. Huge thanks to Eric for the conversation. Make sure to keep an eye out, follow him on social media, or go to fruitbetsmusic.com. I think you can pre-order the album on Merge, or check out Merge's website to keep an eye out when exactly that comes out. It's called Gold Past Life. One other quick thing I want to say is after we were done recording, I was about to drive from LA to San Francisco and was asking Eric for podcast recommendations. And he told me about Pete Holmes, who, if you're not familiar, is a comedian, has like a show on HBO and stuff now, about his podcast called You Made It Weird. And I have listened to a handful of episodes. They're really long, but they're pretty great. And I recently, just this past week, have been listening to the one with Bo Burnham, the interview's from 2016, but he re-released after 8th grade came out. And holy cow, man, it's kind of fucked me up in a way. He definitely says a lot of like controversial things that you may or may not agree with, but I think it's kind of a must listen for anyone who's creating stuff, either publicly or privately today. I don't know. It just really has me thinking. I haven't fully formed what my thoughts are on it. But if you want to talk about it, holler at your girl. I would love to discuss. It's like 2.5 hours long, or maybe even longer. It's something ridiculous. Okay, I hope you dig this episode, which you should definitely listen to before Pete Holmes' podcast. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. See you next week. Let's start with what you've been up to lately and like what you've been up to over the past couple of years.
Well, lately, there's a lot to talk about because I was making a record, which I just finished. Ah. Which I literally just sort of signed off on the master for it yesterday.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's congrats. What I've been up to since October 2nd.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not that long. Like, you started? You started recording?
It seems long to me.
Okay.
I like to work fast.
Yeah.
This one we worked on, the recording part was like 8 weeks.
Okay.
Which I guess is, yeah, that's probably normal-ish, I guess. I don't really know, because...
Yeah, everyone's different, it seems.
Everyone's different. I certainly have made records in a week, and some as long as, like, took 6 months. Not straight, obviously, but... Yeah, so since October, I've been working on that. And nice. It's, like, officially done as of yesterday.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is your first record since, like... in a while, right?
Since 2016.
Okay.
So
not that long. It's like normal.
Kind of normal. I am not super prolific, so it takes a little while for me, but I think in this day and age, you need to be working more, I guess.
Yeah, so, like constantly putting stuff out.
But I felt, I had a really good, I took a long time to write this one. This is the first time I've ever had bonus tracks and extra stuff. And usually I go into making a record with 7 songs, and then I desperately write 2 more and like at the last possible minute, and then put like an instrumental track or something like that. It's a lot of like, I think I a kid who didn't do his homework kind of to this day, but this one I had like 18 songs going and it's an 11 song album, and there's no filler, there's no like interstitial music or anything. It's like 11 songy songs, and there's a couple of bonus tracks and unfinished stuff, and so I'm kind of ready to go again already, I feel like.
Sweet. Do you have a name for it?
Yeah, it's, you're gonna be the first to hear the name. It's called Gold Past Life.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any story behind that?
Well, it's one of the songs, so you'll have to like, you know, dive into the lyrics of it to sort of get that. But yeah, it's the title. There's like a title track and
totally.
Yeah.
Cool. Did you start writing it, like, after... it was Absolute Loser your last album?
Yeah.
Yeah? Like, so have you been writing it for, like, 2 years, or is it more...
No.
No?
I mean, there's maybe a couple of tunes on there that are from that time period, but usually when I write, it's a little bit of an assignment that I give myself. I like that. I like a hunker down.
Yeah.
A little and sort of a see a goal at the end of it. In this day and age, I think we've sort of re-entered a time period more like the 60s, you know, like when the Beatles would put out 2 records a year or something like that. We're sort of back in that, I think, in the age of content and in the age of like a giant echo chamber of stuff. Nothingness yeah. and everythingness.
Yeah.
That we've sort of re-entered a time where I think you can, people want more. We've entered an age where the notion of like what an album is weird, yeah. even at this point. Hip hop always being ahead of the game with like mixtapes and things like that's, I was like, that's such an interesting notion to me of like, you do these things that are not necessarily a quote album anymore. And
yeah.
So I just finished a record and I'm already like interested in being like, what can I do now?
Right. What are you, yeah, what are your feelings about how things have changed? And like, did you feel pressure to put out this album, or was it more like you just wanted to?
No pressure. I gave myself the pressure because you want to be able to go play shows and
right.
just stay in the mix. And Fruitbats got signed earlier, I guess last year now, because we're in 2019 now. Yeah. So earlier part of 2018, we signed Emerge.
Oh, cool.
So, which was great because, like I said, I'm good with an assignment. We signed Emerge and they were like, you have to make a record now because yeah. you have a label. And I mean, they didn't force me, but you know, when you sign with them, that's sort of an agreement. So I had an awesome record label that I love and
yeah.
and a little bit of money to make the record and sort of a deadline. But how I feel about things nowadays, I have no clue.
No.
I've been around long enough that I sort of got started right when the old world was crumbling a little bit.
Yeah.
And the new world was starting. And I do feel pretty lucky, actually, that I got going when I did, because I think it's really hard now for yeah. younger artists.
I feel like the first time I listened to Fruitbats was, like, on Napster.
Sure. I mean, yeah. I think we were sort of like, that's definitely from the early era of Fruitbats was the Napster era yeah. for sure.
But I feel like that was the start of all of whatever's happening now.
Yeah, right? And I remember people were like, it was such a big deal. And I don't know. I'm in a interesting spot because we've actually had a lot of success with streaming mm-hmm. services and stuff. And in a way, if you sort of looked at our streaming numbers, you would think we were some huge band. So it's been kind of good for me. So people are always weighing in on it. And I'm always like, I don't want to bite the hand that feeds me for one thing.
Yeah.
And also it has been good for me on many levels. So, and also I think most people can just end that argument by being like, that's literally just how it is
right.
forever.
Yeah.
So, or well, for the foreseeable same. Forever.
Yeah.
But I think in some form or another, that's probably how things are going to exist now. But I still believe in physical media and like,
I wonder yeah. if, I feel like there will always be a niche of people who do, right? There always
yeah.
will be your vinyl heads, or do you think they'll eventually like, sometimes I wonder if like, I'll be 31 next month. I'm like, am I the last line? Like, do kids these days, other than the ones buying it from like Urban Outfitters?
The Urban Outfitters vinyl thing is always crazy to me. Not that crazy, because it's like, it's the same as buying, when I was a kid, buying cassettes at Kmart or something yeah, like true. That, I guess. But I kind of feel like streaming has made vinyl get pushed forward a little bit from what, at least from my very small sample size of just my own merch table on tour or whatever, or like our online orders, like people want to buy LPs. That's mostly what I sell.
Really?
Yeah, because you get the download code and some yeah. art to look at, and I just kind of want to write the songs and sing them. As far as the punditry of things go, I'm like, I feel like if I weighed in on it, it would probably change tomorrow. Like, something's gonna change tomorrow that I, and whatever you weigh in on is gonna be irrelevant in
yeah
5 minutes.
Right.
So
as long as there's a platform for you to share your music on, you're
yeah.
happy.
Yeah. Is the music industry messed up and a bad structure? Yes.
Yeah.
And it always has been. I think that's the other thing about streaming, where I'm just like, oh, you think they're screwing you over and taking your money? But like, when?
Yeah. What do you think record label execs are doing back in the 70s?
When was that not happening? I've been on only good record labels, luckily, but just in general, it's like the structure is pretty weird.
Yeah. So why do you think you guys have seen so much success in streaming? In terms of plays?
I don't know. Well, I think it's, from what I could tell, it was one person in the New York offices of Spotify that like put our song on
some big playlists
and stuff. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's algorithmic. Sometimes you're just a popular band and your anything you do is going to be big. So it really was just one song for us on that Absolute Loser record, which was like a pretty quiet release in a lot of ways. We didn't get, not too much happened with that, but I have always, every single record I've always done, always one, I never get like, I've never had the one big crazy thing happen, but I always have like one little keep you alive thing happen every time. So that's been like the name of my career for 20 years has just been never, I've never had like the watershed like atom bomb thing happen, but I just always get this one little thing that moves it forward by like an inch every time.
And an example being like getting on a big playlist.
And that was it. Singularly, yeah. Like that was it.
Okay.
And that kind of helped the live shows too. Mm-hmm. We shows kind of got better on that album. And again, it was like not a lot of publicity on that.
Which album?
On Absolute Loser. Okay. But it was just like that song. We went over to England where we really have no traction at all. You know, we played one London show just to super, it's, we'll play there and it's okay, but it's still just kind of like pretty small compared to anywhere in the States. I think we had four times as many people in Missoula, Montana than in London. but you know.
It kind of makes sense.
But people are excited and everything. But then when we played the Green Man Festival in Wales. And I think people, again, there were people who liked us there, but it's a little bit of a cult audience there.
Yeah.
But then when we played Humbug Mountain Song, which was that big Spotify song, the whole big festival, everyone was like singing along and knew it. So I was like, okay, yeah, this... something happened with that song. I don't know what it was, but
yeah, I did see that it has like a ton of plays.
Yeah, we found out that it was, I think, just it was just one person there who just sort of chose it for a couple of big things. And yeah,
I'd imagine this is really nerdy, but the way metadata works, I'd imagine too, because like, I mean, obviously Fruit Bat's music is similar or in the same genre as like the Shins and stuff, but also since you were in the Shins, I bet you there's like a whole metadata thing that also relates if people are like...
I'm sure there is. I always have noticed on things like Spotify and Pandora that we're always interrelated with much bigger artists than us.
Right.
In comparison to other bands that exist in medium to small niches and sort of move along. But I'm always like, if you sort of see the cluster of interrelated bands with Fruit Bats, it's always like much bigger company.
Mm. I feel like
yeah.
10 years ago or so though, I like... thought that Fruit Bats was, I saw Fruit Bats as just as big as any of those bands. Would you feel that was true? Like the way you're talking about it makes it sound like you don't feel that way.
Oh no, not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just sheer numbers.
Right.
Like, I don't know. I don't know if that's unique to Fruit Bats or other bands are that same way, or there are other bands that, I don't know. I mean, I'm happy with where I'm at, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But it's a dubious honor when people come to your sort of one-third sold show and say, I thought you guys were bigger. which is, I think they mean it as a compliment.
Yeah.
Like, of just being like, or be like, what? I mean, you hear that so much. I talk to so many artists who have this same conversation with well-meaning fans, but it's the most backhanded compliment ever.
Yeah.
Which is like, why aren't you guys bigger? Why aren't you guys bigger is a good one.
Yeah.
Why aren't there more people at this show? It all is them saying like, we appreciate you. And
yeah, it's like when my people ask me, why are you single?
I'm
like,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's very much, it's very similar. Yeah, I feel like love and romance and bands are very similar. There's all kinds of weird parallels with that, but
yeah,
it's the same kind of like, it all lives inside your heart kind of stuff.
And you're like giving that up every time you're like performing and stuff. So when people are like, why aren't there more people here?
Yeah, but, and also you live in Portland, right? We're much bigger in Portland than anywhere.
That makes
sense. So we also have a, there. If you've ever seen us in Portland, it looks like everything is peaches and cream.
Right.
Yeah.
This is embarrassing, but somehow, some way, I've seen you perform like different stuff. I've seen you like with Kevin Morby and do the Ted Lucas thing. I've never seen Fruit Bats play.
Yeah. Well, you gotta.
I know.
Come
I
check
feel
it
like
out.
I keep. Yeah. I think you're playing in Portland soon, right?
Yeah.
It's like, damn it.
Yeah.
I like just missed you.
Yeah, we'll come out to that one if you can.
Yeah. So the merge thing, how did that happen?
That happened by some miracle. I don't know. And that's not true. I mean, it is a miracle, and in the sense that it's a beautiful, awesome thing. I've been enamored of that label forever.
Yeah.
I've had sort of a friend at the label for a long time who was like a fan and a friend who we've just been sort of in contact, but never in any sort of like, let's work together kind of way. You know, it was from like the days when I was on Sub Pop and whatever, and we were just looking for a label, and it was like for the first moment, we were like, well, let's talk to those guys and see what's up. It's just the sort of case of knowing somebody somewhere, and you know they appreciate you, and you appreciate them, and I'd like to think, hopefully, it wasn't just singularly her, too, but like, yeah, I think we just had some friends there, and we were looking for labels, which is really hard, so the fact that we sort of had like a handful of labels that we were sort of put a wish list together, and I guarantee you that Merge was by far the number one choice, and it's hard to find a label, so we got to pick our by far number one choice.
That's awesome.
It was the one that came back and said yes, so, which is not how life is supposed to work, so.
Sure it is.
Yeah.
How does a whole finding a label process work? Like, you said that it is not easy. Like,
it is. Well, this sort of goes into a little bit. I have had my ups and downs with my career, but I've somehow miraculously have been on Sub Pop and Merge, which is insane.
Yeah, too huge.
The Sub Pop thing goes back to what I was saying before, which is like, I got in before the door closed on the end. I think if you had, and I've sort of said this before, but it's true. It was something that sort of dawned on me a couple of years ago, which was like, I got signed to Sub Pop, I think I want to say 2002. Yeah, it would have been 2002 because the first record came out in spring 2003. There was interest in late 2001. It was a long, drawn out conversation part of the year in 2002. And I guess we would have been signed in 02 easily. And that was like, I think if I had had the equivalent sort of moment in my career now, Sub Pop never would have signed me or any label. Like we had like put out this small record in 2001, got like a really mean Pitchfork review. It was like the kind of the one piece of press was like this really mean Pitchfork review that said something like, and I was really young at the time and didn't know any better not to read reviews, but it said this band is destined for the bargain bin or something like that. Like it was essentially literally like my first big review in a big publication said, this is hopeless, give up kind of thing. Yeah.
Harsh.
Yeah, super harsh. But we had gotten this really good booking agent by some kind of miracle who she just sort of like took a chance on us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were doing some kind of good shows and we toured. I had been playing in the band Caliphone. I had just sort of been kind of getting to know people. Mm-hmm. Over a couple of years. And I think Sub Pop just, it was like James Mercer from Shins and Isaac Brock from Modest Mouse were fans. And both just were kind of like, I like this band. And and obviously they were in the Sub Pop sphere. So it was really just like based on like a couple of bands that had a little bit of clout at that moment.
Right.
Saying nice things. But I think like that doesn't work anymore. Like you can't just have like two people in bands be like, I like them.
Right, yeah, no.
And still, you know, like, we had played a bunch of shows to nobody and we got a couple of good reviews, too, on that first record. But, yeah, it was just sort of like, it was a quiet, low-key release. I was making quiet, weird, not very ambitious-sounding music. There was no reason why.
Really?
Any label like that should have. But they did, I think, because they were like, I think this will move forward, which it did.
It saw the potential in it.
Yeah. I don't think labels sign you based on your, they're not farm teams anymore.
Right.
It has to be, you have to be really like fully baked now.
Okay.
To be like a young artist, like the younger artists who are my friends, who I know are, I'm always like, just marvel at them where I'm like, God, you're like light years ahead of where I was at when I was like their age.
Which is kind of a bummer that they have to get to that point. Cause isn't that what a label kind of originally was supposed to help do, is like find the young bands and like,
but I understand. I understand because I worked at a label for a little while. Again, it's a little bit just the way of the world. You can't sign a band that doesn't have a booking agent because they need to be able to tour, and it's a, you know, touring. It's the last of the old fashioned promotional tool. It's like this still the thing you kind of still have to do. So if you don't have that, it was just like you have to have like kind of infrastructure built in to get on a label now.
Right. It's a business, I guess.
It's a business. Yeah. Right. Where were we going with this? Yeah. So what's the process of getting on a label? So I don't know, because I got on a really good one when I had no business doing it. a really long time ago. And then I got on a really good one now, I think, because I've just been around a long time, and I think they kind of know that I'll go out there and do stuff.
Do the work.
Yeah. I'm like a...
And you have an established name.
Yeah, and I'm sure some labels were probably like, I'm 100% sure some labels passed, because they did. You know, Fruit Bats are we're a weird little pony. Like, it's not a... We're not an old war horse where it's just like dollar signs.
Right.
But, and also not like a young, hot baby band that's... clearly is gonna like set the world on fire or something like that. But
I feel like what you're describing though sounds like a sustainable career to me. When I hear that, I'm like, that just sounds sustainable.
But I think that's the word for it. It has been sustainable. It's not very, which is like not a very sexy word, but
I don't know. I feel like it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, obviously, like, and I want to do cool stuff and make people feel things too, yeah, so totally. lest we forget that. But yeah, I think I have this, I have always had a pretty pragmatic approach to how I do things a little bit, probably to my detriment sometimes. Sometimes I feel like I should come in with huge expectations and demands of myself and everything like that. But whatever I've done has kind of worked. Against some odds, I think, so.
So what's this record all about?
This record, I wish I'm just formulating that now. It definitely has a theme to it that is, and again, I'm just formulating it now, so this is going to be a little harder for me to explain since I'm still kind of thinking about it, but it's sort of a series of conversations with people, not necessarily like specific people, some specific people, but... I started to write a record that was going to be about places, and I realized it was way more about people, or if it was about places, it was sort of about emotional places. Okay. So this is a little bit of like a therapy record for people, and it's probably for myself too, which, you know, like with anything, you're always like, I think a lot of musicians I know, and I think performers in general, I've heard comedians talk about this too, but where everything they're doing is to comfort themselves a little bit. So this might be my record where I am soothing myself a little bit.
Like in a cathartic type of way? Or
Yeah, in some ways, or in different ways.
Yeah.
Maybe from song to song. Some are cathartic, some are like a little aggressive, some are very soothing and therapeutic.
I think art, that is what art is for a lot of people, right? It's like that therapy and it's self-expression for where you're at now. Yeah. You also keep saying we. Who is Fruit Bats these days?
Oh, yeah. I always say we. I always have just said we because it's a plural band name, but it's I.
Okay.
But it's a royal we, I guess. Okay. Yeah.
Did you like bring in musicians to record with, or did you play everything yourself?
Yeah. There was a few folks who have sort of off and on been, it's always a little bit of a roving band of different people over the years. But yeah, a couple of the people who I've played with live lately, some people I haven't, some kind of guest stars, and it's a cool collection of people. But it's like on several songs, it's all just me.
Okay, cool. When do you think you'll tour for it, or when will it come out?
It's gonna come out in late spring, early summer, and yeah, we'll probably do some like festivals in the summer and then just start doing normal tour type stuff. And I'm playing these shows this month, January, in the Pacific Northwest. It's kind of like a knock in the dust off kind of shows.
Yeah.
To the home base crowd.
Mm-hmm. So you're doing Portland. Are you doing Seattle too?
Yeah, Bellingham, Seattle, Portland.
Okay, cool. How long did you live in Portland?
I lived in Portland for 8 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How's the transition been coming down here?
It's been great. We lived here before.
Okay.
We lived in we've gone back and forth between here and Portland, but our last stint in Portland was 8 years, so it's been fine.
Don't miss it too much.
No, I love the Northwest. I also lived in Seattle before that. But I lived in the Northwest kind of more or less in a slightly off and on way, but mostly on for, I think, 14 years all told. I sort of came of age there in a way. I sort of became a grown-up there.
Yeah.
So that's home for me in a lot of ways, as much of a Chicago person I am from way back, and obviously went through a lot of my upbringing and stuff there. I feel like I became a man in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
And it's such an evocative place, just the way it looks and the way the air feels and the way it smells. It doesn't ever leave you.
No.
But that's home in a lot of ways for me.
Right. Yeah, going for a run up there, I was like, this is so much nicer.
Yeah, yeah.
The air, the smell.
Yeah, right. I miss that a lot. So, but yeah, I've become a West Coast person. I'm just sort of a creature of, I like it all.
Yeah, totally. I can relate to that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. What was I going to say? What is your songwriting process like in general?
I have no process.
No.
No. Well, yeah. Well, my process is kind of not a process, I guess. But it's collage-y, I think, a little bit. Modern technology for songwriting is amazing because of voice memos on your phone. And because of just, like, being able to just put MP3s or voice memos into iTunes folders. And it's really just, like, having an amazing, like, auditory file cabinet.
Yeah.
And I mean, I came up using cassette 4-tracks and stuff like that, which is amazing and has a total vibe. But like, I've written songs while driving because you just go like, you know, like just hit the voice memo and you kind of can like sing something out. I've written bass lines walking down the street and just having something to capture your brain in your pocket at all time. And not that you couldn't have had a dictaphone in your pocket or something like that, but I love the organizational aspects of that. So anyways, I have all these iTunes folders with like sketches, some of which are like just me sitting with a guitar in a living room, some are literally walking down the street, and you just can kind of go in and you kind of start writing something and then be like, oh, maybe that thing would work there. And so I guess that is a process.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
definitely a process.
I have piles of things
that
I kind of like go and grab things out of the pile, but
switching gears a bit, I remembered what I was gonna say. You said festivals. You also co-produce a festival, right?
Yeah.
What's it called?
It's called Wichika.
Wichika.
Yeah. It. I've done it for, I think this is going to be our 9th year this year. I don't really do very much anymore because it's gotten big to an extent that, the first several years of it was kind of more or less my birthday party, and I did kind of everything. I mean, my partner, Jeff, and I did everything, but I did all the, like, he owned the venue.
Okay.
But I did all the booking and was like the stage manager and the full back line and everything, and then I would play, and it was ridiculous.
Like,
it was
so, like, a lot of work for a birthday party.
But it was really fun too, like, but anyways, we have like people now that do everything, so I just go and I wear a cool jacket and walk around.
Nice. And you also score films, right?
Yeah.
Okay. How much of that have you been doing?
Lately, I haven't done as much of it as I would love. I love doing it.
Damn.
It's a weird world that I've been trying to infiltrate for like 10 years.
Okay.
And I've been fortunate enough to be able to, I do like on average about one movie a year.
Okay.
Which I think is great. It's kind of like, you could be like Johnny Green. You have to kind of be like Johnny Greenwood, you know, and be like, I'm going to play in Radiohead and then just do big, amazing movies and get nominated for Oscars. Some people are like, you have to just fully dive into it and just do anything and take anything you can. Mm-hmm. But I don't think those people, they're not in like bands either.
Right.
So I'm kind of neither because I'm not like such a big cheese that I could just kind of like pick the awesome Oscar movies to do every now and again. I'm not in the trenches either with it really. So I take what I can get. And I love doing movies. It's so fun.
Right.
Just fun, like, putting sounds to picture.
Yeah.
Such a satisfying feeling.
How does that process usually work? Like, in terms of collaboration, especially?
Well, it's just a lot of phone calls and notes and stuff. It totally depends on the director.
Yeah.
Completely different every time. It took me several films to even really get good at it. I was just lucky enough on my first few, which I think I did a nice job and everything, but like when I think back, I was really didn't know what I was doing.
Mm.
But it is the true fake it till you make it
thing
where I was just like, I think I must have worked hard enough and like just kept my head down and just answered every single question well and kept my cool for like 4 or 5 pretty grueling projects that by the time now I'm pretty good at it. And you have to be able to just interpret musical direction from sometimes non-musical people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cool. It's like a cool challenge.
Yeah. Is that the grueling part? Like just that communication? And
I think the grueling part early on was more technical for me, which was like, because, you know, I'm not working on huge budget things, so learning how to record well enough to like, and putting, there's a technical aspect to it that that was like, that was the real learning curve, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, getting crazy notes and stuff that don't make any sense that you have to sort of decipher.
Right. And hope that you decipher it correctly.
Yeah, that.
Like, ask the right questions.
Yeah, that. I had to learn Pro Tools by looking at YouTube. Like on the second, I hired an engineer on the first movie that I did just because I wanted to do it so bad. And so I went out of pocket just in order to do it. And then the second movie, I was like, I can't do that. Like, it was going to be a much bigger, longer process. And I was like, I need to learn how to use Pro Tools. I knew how to record. I had done 4-track and stuff like that.
Right.
And at that point, was working with GarageBand. But you can't make a movie on a 4-track in GarageBand.
Right.
So I learned Pro Tools by watching this YouTube guy.
Yeah.
Who was amazing. I wish I like remembered who he was. And I wish I could find him and thank him, because he like saved my life. He was good.
I have a hard time with the YouTube. Like, I either need to learn audio engineering or find money to pay an audio engineer with this. But I'm not good at the YouTube learning. I don't know what it is.
I'm not really either. But this was like, I was like, you need to, I was like.
You had no other option.
I had no other option. I don't have a great attention span for that. And yeah, I'm not great at YouTube learning either, but. This guy was just wonderful. I just happened to happen upon the
right guy.
The right guy who explained it so well. But yeah, I was working on this very big project where I did not know what I was doing at all.
Yeah.
And it was really scary.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But that's so good for you.
So good for you.
Yeah.
That's where growth comes from, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of the show is about how showing other artists how artists make their art and live, sustain financially. How does it work for you? What brings in the income that you live off of the most? Or is it a mix?
It's a mix. I would tell anybody, in the music business, you really do get paid pennies. It's true. But if you just make a lot of stuff, my thing that I'm lucky is that I just have a lot of music out there now.
Right.
And from over the course of the years, too. So it's all stuff that has, in its time, had a little bit of value. So, and I had the one song in 2003, When You Love Somebody, which was just this very popular song. Mm-hmm. That would have been kind of the one, I always say the one small little thing happens on every one. And that was definitely that. And that was kind of, that song kind of kept me going for a long time. But I've always had to just take work. And yeah, so my piles of pennies kind of keep me going just from having a lot of work. But then I also I work all the time, every single day.
Yeah.
Any kind of musical job that comes my way, if it's relatively cool, and you got to kind of pick the things that make sense. But
what other type of stuff are you doing?
Well, the film stuff did lead to some commercial work, which I sort of do from time to time, and that pays well. I've done a little bit of producing for people and some co-writing and, all the usual, the little things that you do.
Yeah.
Every possible thing you can do, I do.
I don't think, maybe it's just non-musicians. I don't think people always realize that's how it works. I think in their heads, musicians just make their music and put out albums.
That sounds awesome. I would love to do that. How do I sign up for that?
Yeah. Again, I don't know if that's sustainable.
I mean, maybe. It is if you do really well. And some artists just do well in one. They have one arena that really somehow does well for them. Like, if you're a jam band or something like that, you could just go tour.
Right.
And there's a million festivals that you can play. And I don't know. I don't actually. I've never been in a jam band. But I'm just saying, I think that's probably the bread and butter of that world, is that you you can go play shows and.
Then you're on the road your entire life.
Yeah, and you don't have to, it's not the same sort of paradigm that an indie band or something tours in, which is there's a certain structure to it. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you're I don't know, maybe you're a band that just writes these crazy songs that get synced all the time.
Yeah.
Believe me, people always want you to do that, but I don't want to write something that sounds like an insurance commercial or something like that. I mean, I have. Maybe by accident sometimes, but I certainly don't want to I think some people maybe just have these huge successes in one realm. I never have, but I've always had very minor successes in multiple realms. So
right.
I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I have cast a wide net.
Have any fruit bats on been synced for like movies or anything?
Oh yeah, many like times.
Heard it and, yeah.
Yeah.
I've definitely heard Fruit Bat songs in movies and TV shows. And
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
But especially that song When You Love Somebody, which was kind of like a sync machine for a while there.
Yeah.
Back in 2000, you know, 3, 4, 5, when that was, there was a little more money in that.
I was going to say, I feel like you must have made more money back then.
And I wasn't making good money back then at all. I had a day job until 2006.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I worked, I did craft service on film sets. Like, I was the guy that made snacks for film crews.
Oh, wow.
So I did that, and then...
Where was that? Where were you then?
I did that in Chicago and in Seattle. And then in 2006, I joined the Shins.
Okay.
And I played in that band for 4 years, and I have not ever had to, like, have a day job again after that. That completely... Well, the money was obviously good playing in that band, and it was sort of, like, a really huge time for that band, too. So it was crazy. I got to see crazy stuff and do crazy things. And
yeah.
And get a savings account and things like that. It really did sort of like, it altered the course of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I was like, it didn't make me like rich beyond my wildest dreams, but it gave me the most money I'd ever had.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to do the craft service catering anymore. Mm-hmm. It also made me, which I think is always important. I think it's always good to play in someone else's band if you can.
It's an obvious question, but why is that?
It just gives you, it gives you different perspective on how different people work.
Yeah.
In the case of the Shins, because it was so huge, it made me totally be like, I gotta keep moving forward. Like, it made me glimpse a world that I was like, and I've never been able to really go back to quite that level, and certainly Fruit Bats are not at that level, but it did make me be like, I don't ever want to not have this as a possible option close by. Like, it just was a motivator. And it made me, like, when I sort of came out the other side and I made Ruminant Band record with Fruit Bats, I had a way better kind of ambition. And not in, like, a world dominance kind of thing, but just in a way of, like, I just saw how the machine worked a little bit.
Okay.
You get to sort of see, like, behind the curtain and makes you know what you want a little bit more.
Do you have, like, a favorite memory from the crazy experiences back then?
With Shins? Oh, God. Like, millions of them. There are so many, but... I think probably like playing on Saturday Night Live would be the, if I had to pick one off the top of my head.
Do you remember who the host was?
Oh yeah, it was Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
No, because you're there. You're like, yeah, I mean, we like hung out with him like for days.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's like a days long
process. It's a days long process.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't just go. You don't just go.
It's not
go
like playing a show.
No, you go and there's rehearsals and everything, and you do the, because you know, like when you see on SNL, it's like I'm Jake Gyllenhaal with musical guests of shit, and you like stand there with Jake Gyllenhaal, so you have to film all these like promos,
right? That makes sense
for the commercials and stuff like that. So it's amazing. Like, it was really cool, and I had just grown up with that show, like, changed my life and totally like get, like when I was a kid, and that was just a cool thing.
Yeah.
To do.
I know that you have a passion for film, and I want to ask about that, but before I do, what's your relationship with those songs that gave you the minor success, as you described it, like the ones that you've probably heard tens of thousands of times?
When You Love Somebody, to be very honest, if I never had to play that song again, I'd be totally cool, but I don't hate it, and recently I've been playing these like solo shows that are really fun and really kind of intimate.
Mm-hmm.
And several times I've played that song and like the entire audience sings along to it. It's made me really like appreciate that song a little bit more.
Yeah.
To where like people really like that song. That song was when I was sort of saying I would write 7 songs for a record and then scramble to, that was the last song I wrote for Mouthfuls. You'll notice it doesn't even have multiple verses. I just repeat the first verse again. And the chorus is instrumental. And that's just out of like sheer speed and laziness. Like, I just, it really is just one verse.
Right.
And then I didn't even write lyrics to the chorus. The chorus is just a keyboard line. But something about that song.
I wonder.
Struck a chord really strong. Yeah, I think it does. Like, it was
just like pop, if you think
easily
pop
the most throwaway song I've ever made.
Wow.
Easily. I put no effort into that song.
Wow.
What you hear when you hear that song, I wrote it just like that.
Funny.
Yeah, it's like a bowl and nothing. By far my, like up until that Humbug Mountain song from a couple years ago, it was by far my most popular song by like miles. Yes, my relationship with it is I'm very thankful
for it.
And I've come to appreciate it a little more like recently, like just those couple times when just everybody, it's a night, it's so cool when people do that. Like, yeah. I think it's not lost on me that I'm lucky that a bunch of people in a room are singing along to every word of something I did. It's so rad.
Part of that weird too. Or is it mostly just rad?
Sure, yeah. It's probably weird, weird rad.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not...
Or surreal, I guess, would be
yes.
a better way to describe it.
I mean, I can't even imagine if you were, like, a huge artist or something like that.
Right.
I still feel like my audience is still kind of feels a little bit like a little cult, you know?
I was gonna say, do you feel like you have a cult following?
Yeah, probably. I mean, for lack of a better term, yes.
Yeah.
I know a lot of my fans. Like, I'm friendly with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like people, it's like I recognize them. We don't play big rooms. Like they're right there.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah. I have friendly relationships with many of them.
Right.
Because I have been in the same room with them many times over the course of a decade plus.
I feel like a lot of my favorite bands are like cult following bands. I feel like rarely do I. Or some of my favorite bands, like the huge ones.
Yeah. I've always been enamored of the sort of lost classic artists and stuff, which Andy from Vetiver and I always, Andy was more, I'm paraphrasing Andy, but he was saying how much he sort of loves that stuff, and he's like, and I have thereby relegated myself to
the,
I'm way paraphrasing, right. but sort of being like, he's like, I have sort of elevated these lovable bands that nobody's ever heard of and thereby created a world in which that's the only world I'm
living in.
Yeah,
that's funny. So I think I read or heard or something that you thought that you were going to have a career in film before music.
Yeah.
Into your life.
I thought that I would. Or at least that was what I wanted to do from the time of being a little kid until right up before I was touring in bands.
Yeah. What made music happen for you? How did that happen for you, I guess?
I don't know. I think it was a little bit of a series of accidents. I always could sing well. And so some friends who had a band in high school asked me to be the singer of their band, but I was too scared to just stand there and sing. So I forced myself to learn guitar, sort of in the same way that I forced myself to learn Pro Tools or something, but I was like, it was sort of out of fear and embarrassment.
Mm.
But then I couldn't figure out how to like apply the chords I learned to cover songs, so I just started writing songs immediately. So I sort of just was like, I was a singer-songwriter like super out of the gates. Yeah. And then also like, I think like for a lot of dudes in high school, it was like the first time like girls paid attention to me and stuff. It just sort of, I was like, this is cool. Like I need to do, it felt like I was not good at sports and I was sort of a nerd and I was into like pop culture and movies and stuff like that.
Right.
But you can't impress possible suitors based on your knowledge of movies. But if you could like sing and play guitar, that seems to work. And not that, I mean, that's like a cheap reason. Oh, it wasn't just like, I just wanted to get girls or whatever. Not really that, but it certainly, I just got attention and like good attention.
Yeah.
Just in general. And it felt good to like go up on stage, sing and play guitar and sing a song for someone.
Yeah.
I mean, it inherently feels good. I think it's the reason why people do it.
Right.
So it was a very palpable thing to do other than, I was like, I wanted to make movies, but, and I did sometimes make weird VHS movies, but there is something about making music that is super immediate. It is like, of art forms. It's, and it's like beyond getting a guitar, then you could just, as soon as you have the guitar, I would literally play at like a coffee shop in the downtown of the town where I lived, and it was like immediately something.
Right. Yeah.
I knew I wanted to create things, but as far as like making a movie or writing a novel or whatever, I was just like, how does that even work? Really? Yeah.
Are you like a results or like it's kind of like a results oriented thing?
Maybe.
Where you can just like put it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew I wanted to do something, and I liked all these mediums, and like singing and writing songs was just at that moment was the easiest thing to do. And then I was like, well, I'll get older and I'll become a movie director. But I didn't get into any I couldn't get into college. I had really bad grades.
Oh,
You kind of have to go. I mean, I'm sure you can become a movie director without going to school, but I was not like the universe.
Like study the art.
Yeah, like assistant. Yeah, I was just like, and I guess maybe you're meant to do it or not. But it was that same thing over and over again where it just didn't seem like I could do that.
Yeah,
I was like, I didn't know how to like achieve that. And maybe if you really want to do it, you just figure it out.
Yeah.
But I was like.
This other thing.
Band thing was like not really moving, and then I joined this band Caliphone.
I love Caliphone.
Me too. And I loved them, and they kind of like plucked me out of nowhere.
Really? And you just like meet them?
It's a sort of a long story, but yeah, the long story short is like I kind of came out of nowhere for them. And I think they liked that about me a little bit. It was like I didn't have any angles that I was working.
Mm-hmm.
I think they had kind of like tried to play with a couple of other people. I think they wanted like a younger person, and there was like this one guy. He got the job, but then he was trying to get on their label and get his. I'm sure he was just like whatever, but I think when they saw me, I was like a total babe in the woods.
Yeah,
they're like, this guy doesn't want anything, and I didn't even tell them that I wrote songs or anything for I think months. After being in the band. But yeah, as soon as I joined that band, we went on this huge tour with Modest Mouse, and the Shins were on that tour as an unsigned band. Met all these crazy people.
Is that
people.
How you met James Mercer?
Yeah.
Were you in Caliphone before you? Yeah.
Yeah. I was in Caliphone first, and then I met all these crazy people, and it was that thing I was saying where it was my first glimpse at just seeing the machinery work a little bit. And I was like, oh, I think I can actually do this. Like, I could kind of see how this works. And like, you just get to know people and whatever. My life totally changed.
Yeah.
Then. And then I was just in bands after that. That was that.
Seeing Tim from Caliphone play is probably one of my very favorite shows the past few years.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah. It was at Mississippi Studios. There's like people next to me like crying. Then that made me cry.
Yeah, he's really special. And like just having that kind of was college for me in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, I don't even really know how to describe. He is a musician's musician in many ways. I think will be. I mean, he is appreciated in his time, but I think like that music is really timeless. And it was pretty incredible music to get to play.
Yeah.
It was another one of those things where I don't really think I had any business even playing that music. But like, it taught me so much. Caliphone was such a band's band in a lot of ways. They garnered so much immediate respect that even though I was like this young 23-year-old guy, I was hanging out with these older people who everybody thought they were like these elder statesmen. So I immediately was in that world.
Yeah.
Even though I had no business.
Right. Did they see some success? I didn't know about Caliphone probably till the past like, I don't know, 5 years or so. Were they like big back then?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
Was it like the cult following type?
Following, like even more. I think they would actually fall under the category way more of cult following even than Fruit Bats or something, because the music is very culty.
Yeah.
In a way too, and it's much more esoteric, and you got to really like climb into that world. But
yeah,
other artists loved it so much because it is. That music is really special and for real, you know?
Mm, it's very authentic.
Yeah. So creative, and it's like, everybody wants that. They want to do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways. Yeah, it's just like, I don't know how to describe it, but I'm describing it poorly.
People should just listen.
Yeah, you should just listen. It's special. It's special music, and it's advanced alien music in a way.
Totally.
But yeah, like, so from there, I never looked back on anything, really.
It sounds like most of your career has been very, you've talked about a lot, like, meeting the right people or people connecting to you for whatever reason, and you're very humble about it. Do you feel like that is true, A, and kind of like...
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's some cliche of, like, now I'm totally not going to remember it, but, like, sort of, like, opportunity. Do you know what I'm talking about? Opportunity plus luck equals blah, blah. I can't remember. Yeah, I've had a lot of fortuitous meetups. And really, actually, kind of comes down to like one or two moments really in my life. And just the timing of when I was born, of just being able to sort of get going when I did.
Yeah.
I feel lucky. And I've been nice and I've kept going.
Right.
Which I think is, those are like a couple of other important things. I've had like a lot of moments I thought back to where I was like, oh yeah, that's like, I should have quit after that.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Why do you say that?
Well, I mean, because most people would have, like, okay. would have been, like, signs that maybe pointed to, like, the first Fruit Bats record came out. It was, like, just, like...
That Mean Pitchfork reveal.
Yeah, which, that shouldn't derail your career, but it was, like, and it didn't, and it shouldn't. And then, we did some tours, and, like, literally no one came, like, nothing happened on that. But little glimmers of things would happen, and then you just have to just not stop.
Right.
like...
Yeah.
But... There's a lot of I could go deep into some cliches on that too. You have to be kind of good, I think, too.
That helps.
Yeah.
For sure. Is it, why do you feel that you haven't quit?
Because I have always moved forward one inch okay. every time. And I've always said, like, maybe I'll quit when I don't
right.
move one inch. But it's always like, sometimes it's an inch or sometimes it's like 5 inches.
Yeah.
But it's always just like a little bit. I'm always like just sitting there waiting for like nothing to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then being like, but if this one thing happens, then I can go on. Yeah. And then I'm always like the one thing happens.
Okay, cool. Do you have any, I feel like you probably just said it, but any other pieces of advice for an artist who's like trying to make it happen today?
Today?
Yeah.
Learn to record. That's the number one like palpable nuts and bolts thing to know. Learn how to record. I don't want to put producers and engineers out of business.
Right.
But when like Starbucks asks you to make a Christmas song, take that money and
right. take it all.
Put it into your tour or right. something or whatever. I think especially in this day and age, I want there to still be producers and recording studios and stuff like that. But,
right.
But I would say learn to record and try to make music that's good and means something to you first instead of music that's going to sound good for a Subaru Outback commercial. And then hopefully you'll still get the Subaru yeah. Outback commercial anyway, but just to, you know, pay your bills.
Totally. The Fresh Fruit Bet song hasn't been in a Subaru Outback commercial.
Yeah.
I could see that.
I know. I wish it would.
I actually know someone who does music supervision for Subaru, so...
Put in a word.
We'll give it the nudge.
Yeah,
nudge.
That'd be good.
Yeah. I think he does mostly, like, online ads, but whatever.
yeah.
Like, short films or something. Cool. What's something you're excited about today?
Today?
Mm-hmm.
This day?
This day.
Oh, God. I'm not excited today. This is...
No?
No, I'm stressed out. Like, I have to go... I'm still getting ready for tour stuff.
Okay.
So whatever I'm excited about today is, like, whatever... Once I'm kind of done with some of the busy work that I have to do is probably like, I'm excited about like, just like watching TV or something like that. I'm not excited about anything. I'm excited about things, you know, in the coming days, but.
What's something you're excited about in the coming days?
I'm excited to play those shows in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. You're working with a booking agent, right?
Yeah.
What kind of stuff do you have to do? Like on your end? Is it?
For show stuff?
Yeah.
Well, the awesome thing is I don't, as far as like nuts and bolts stuff, I don't have to do anything anymore.
Okay.
They do everything. And we also have a tour manager and I have a manager. So I don't have to do any of that stuff. But in the past few years, I've really started to take the like live show, especially since I have so much infrastructure now as far as people helping. I take the shows themselves very seriously.
Okay.
So for me, it's more I rehearse by myself even before I rehearse with the band.
Okay.
And I put a lot of pressure on myself to make them awesome.
Yeah.
So, which gives me anxiety.
Okay. That's fair.
But it's like, you know, I think ultimately it's, I hope, a good thing. Because,
yeah.
And I think a lot of artists do. But where you just like, I just want this to rule
yeah.
for people. So, I wish I didn't care. But there has been times in the past where, for long stretches, I didn't care at all. And I realized, like, I'm like, it wasn't very good.
Sure, fans can probably tell too when someone really cares. I feel like that kind of.
I care, and it should helps. Be. There should be simple connectivity between you and the audience too that you can't rehearse. That totally, like only the universe, the ether is in charge of that. That's just kind of like that happens or it doesn't.
Right.
I heard some, I think it was Pete Holmes, the comedian was saying like every audience is like it's like a snowflake, like it's not they've
awesome.
Never been together, like those human is like it's their first time as an audience together and probably last time
right.
too, like of that exact combination of energy
yeah
is like so scary.
Yeah, I've never thought about it that way.
Yeah, it's scary but awesome, but where
right.
you're just like it's a chemical it's a completely different and brand new chemical compound every night.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite city to play in?
Portland. Chicago, New York, probably many others too. The greatest root bat show, think of all time, I have to say, was in Philadelphia. No offense to anyone else, and there's been some great shows, but like just the most crazy response from an audience ever was at this show we did in Philadelphia a couple years ago. I couldn't even believe it. It was like, it was like being in the Beatles or something. But it was just like I was saying about like that chemical compound or something in the audience. Because we played in Philly after that show, which was sold out. We played like a bigger venue, which was like totally not sold out and like half sold. And it was just kind of like, you know, the second time through.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, it's crazy. Like, that was just that night in Philly for whatever reason. But it sort of felt like, oh, we're going to be the biggest band in Philly forever.
Yeah.
But yeah. So you never know.
One other question I wanted to ask you that I almost forgot is the name Fruit Bats. I know you, I feel like you have a slight, an interesting relationship with it.
Oh yeah, it's the worst.
Have you just like come to accept that?
Yeah, I don't know. It was like a joke band name in 1996 that just doesn't mean anything.
But
I think it was like a joke, but it also seemed vaguely... At the time, there was something very, like, simple about it, too, that kind of seemed, it almost seemed a little bit like it would stand the test of time, or something was maybe my idea on it. But I also don't really remember,
coming up
with it, really. No. Yeah.
And now, I think I've read before, when you put out music as EDJ, you're like, it was got too complicated with the...
It was just a dumb move. A failed experiment on my part.
You had to do it, though.
I kind of had to do it. It was surprising to me. But yeah, it was good. I circled back around and figured it out.
Yeah, I'd imagine grateful for it now.
Yeah. But yeah, grateful for a little knowledge of how things work.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Great.
Yeah.